I'm Jim Knudsen, former missionary in South Africa, together with my wife from 1954 to 1972, and then Secretary for Africa for the ALC and later for the ELC from 1973 up till the end of last year. And now retired and able to do things like this. The title is, How Can You Generalize About a Place That, a Continent That's Three Times the Size of the United States? How can you? You can't. It's just like if you went to Germany or Russia or Brazil, and maybe some of you have, and someone said, well, give us an hour's presentation on the United States. Where would you stop and where would you start? Well, you'd try to do something. You'd try to do something from your own perspective. If you travel around the States, perhaps you'd have a wider perspective. If you hadn't, you'd have to do whatever you could. And that's what I am trying to do here in a few minutes. I might say right off that next week we will have more in-depth sessions relating to South Africa, also to Senegal, a special situation in West Africa, and then some on mutuality and interdependence between churches in Africa and churches in the United States, and what does it mean for us as mission comes back to us from Africa. And then, as you've heard or know, some of you, Solveig Chesset will be having sessions on Namibia and the Southern African region. So there will be plenty of African interest next week. This is an overview, and a very quick overview. What I'll do is show you some snapshots, literally some slides, but first of all, a few introductory remarks. Impressions that people have, images people have. How many of you have traveled in Africa? How many people here have been in Africa? Okay, so you have your impressions, your images. Others who haven't been there, you have yours. It's an old saying that everyone has his or her Africa. And we all have our images of Africa, and the name evokes certain things in our minds. Maurice Strong worked with the United Nations in emergency relief in 1986, and his impression was this. My strongest impression is one of tremendous regard for the African person. The courage and ingenuity and will to live they demonstrate is beyond belief. That's an impression, too, that I would certainly share. Another one from someone else, it is anonymous. Once you have visited Africa, you never leave it. And Africa never leaves you. It's dust. And if we wanted to give you smell of Africa, we'd take it on the road, but it should be red dust. It's dust, mostly red, sometimes white, sometimes black, settles on the heart, the soul, and remains forever. It also settles in your lungs and on your clothes. I have a nice Twins baseball cap that's all dusty with good African dust on it. The call is strong, strong and insistent. One always answers, one always returns, if only in spirit. African impressions. African issues and challenges. Today, you have been watching television, you have been reading in the newspapers, you see titles like Ailing Africa, this book by a development person, How Can Africa Survive? What next in Africa? Is Africa going to just disappear? And so forth and so on. Why are there so many difficulties, so many problems? Well, we can only barely touch the surface on that too, barely. The colonial legacy. Africa was colonized, perhaps as northern part of the world was. There are some similarities with Latin America. The exploitation of minerals, of resources, of humans, the slave trade. The strange boundaries that Africa has were drawn up in 1884 and 85 in Berlin by Europeans. They decided where the boundaries go. The Africans didn't decide that. Some of them made sense, a lot of them didn't make sense. Underdevelopment, of course, in many, many ways. Then the new countries, which came into being in 1960-61. Those of you that went to school before that, we had to learn all these names all over again. We had to learn that northern Rhodesia was now Zambia, and southern Rhodesia was Zimbabwe, and the Nyasaland was Malawi, etc., etc. Politically, newcomers on the stage. Africa is very old, and for many people, it is the cradle of humankind, that the first recognizable human beings were from Africa. But as new nation states, very, very new. And so they're going through a lot of difficulties all at once. 70 leaders of African nations have lost their positions by assassination or military coups in 30 years in 30 countries. 70 of them. And it's still going on. There are a lot of similarities there of the history of Europe and America. The thing is, it's been telescoped and compressed into just a few years. And we go back to the history of Europe, the wars, the centuries of war, but Europe developed, at least it was moving through that. And even us, a little shorter history than Europe, but we had a Revolutionary War, we had a Civil War, and we're still sorting out things. So the thing is, in Africa, a lot of that stuff has been compressed into just a few decades, and Africans have had to move literally from the Stone Age to the Space Age or beyond in just a few decades. You can be out in the village and see a woman still grinding her corn, her mealies, with a stone. And at night, the satellites are going over. And the jets. And she maybe hasn't even ridden in a car. How do you put all that together? So they're caught up in this. And then they're also caught up in the East-West struggle. And whenever we think it's to our interest to intervene, we jump in. Whether it's in Somalia, or again in Ethiopia, Angola, Mozambique, right now Liberia, we're not sure what to do, but in Russia the same. So Africa hasn't been left to sort out some of its own stuff either. It's been caught in the crossfire. So today, and we can't go into any detail, but 18 of the 25 poorest countries in the world, just by judging by income, are in Africa. 6 of 10 people in Africa have insufficient food. And we dump it in the tank. Even we who are more enlightened people, I guess that's the kind of come to hold when we see the garbage cans full of food. 6 out of 10 don't have enough insufficient food. And 1 in 5 are malnourished, and most of those are kids. They're malnourished, they're not going to develop fully. Now this is a little bit dated, but the comparison is valid, because I haven't been able to find a good one right now. In 71, for one cow, Julius Nyerere said we could get a barrel of oil. 10 years later, it took 9 cows to buy a barrel of oil, and it's gone beyond that. Well, it's somewhat similar to what we're doing, but nothing as difficult, because we're not on the edge of starvation and famine. The droughts across the Sahel, the Sahara, all the way across, and into Ethiopia and Sudan, which we're very acquainted with in many, many ways. The debt crisis. Right now, Africa altogether gets $15 billion in aid, various kinds of aid a year, $15 billion, but $9 billion goes back to service the debt. So, again, well, one could go on, and one could paint a bleak picture, and it is a troubling picture, but we're not giving up, we're not giving up hope, and we'll have a chance to talk a little bit later about some things. But just one other thing before we go to the slides. The church is one of the brightest spots in Africa. Maybe it's the brightest. The church, in 1900, there were 118 million people in Africa, all of Africa. At that time, and that's going back, they figure about 32 million were Muslims, mostly in the north. 8 million Christians, at the most. Members of Christian churches. Traditional African religion, TAR, traditional African religion, 78 million. Now, 2000, they're projecting, maybe that's a little high, I have 550 million total here, some people would say it's a little more. Whether this is a little off or not, the proportion is the important thing. In another 10 years, there will be about 325 million Muslims, 323 million Christians, just about divided equally. And 122 million traditional African religion. So these two religions have taken most of Africa. Right now, people say about 45% each. 45% Muslim mostly here, 45% Christian here. This is the fastest growing Christian church in the world. More people are in church in Africa on Sunday per capita, per person, in sub-Saharan Africa than any other place. Yeah.
Why is it considered good that their native religion has declined so drastically?
Pardon?
Why is it considered good that they're native?
It's not necessarily considered good. This is what's happened. Yeah, that the church, I mean, it's, and we could get into an interesting discussion about the values that there are in the traditional religion and some of the problems where we white people came, just as we did with the American Indian, and said it's all bad.
wasn't all bad. And more, and that's a whole thing we could get into, the whole idea of contextualization. And what are the good things in African culture and African religion that can be used and can be brought in and, you know, baptized and made part of Christianity, and it's happening. But this is to show the growth of the Christian church and the fact that when you go to, you know, many places in Europe, everything is declining, and here we're struggling. But the fact that there's been a tremendous acceptance. Now, there's an ambiguous story there, too. There are different motives for doing that. Now, I would like us to turn to the slides and kind of run through a little bit of what we've been talking about. Turn some lights off, please. I'd like to say at the outset that these slides were prepared, basically, I've been a staff member of a Lutheran church, and I still work a lot with Lutheran churches. So if there are those of you who are from other churches or non-church, I hope you accept the fact that the bias is toward the relationships that we'd have. The pictures are from areas in Africa where the Lutheran church has been working. And some of the personnel are people from our churches, because I find as I go around in the churches and talk to people, they want to know what are our people doing. So try to show them a little bit of that. African landscape varies a lot from the rolling savannas of the Central African Republic, which is in the western central part of Africa, to the Sahel, the edge of the Sahara in Senegal, just on the edge where the desert is continuing to grow and expand, and where overgrazing and drought and cash cropping sometimes in the wrong place has led to more and more desertification. There are also the mountains. Ethiopia is called the Switzerland of Africa. One of the problems in Ethiopia in bringing food relief during these past years has been this very mountainous terrain. Sometimes people have to go 3 days by foot or by donkey to reach a road of any kind. Then snow on the equator, Kilimanjaro in Tanzania. Some of you have seen that. By the way, the first German who sent back word to Germany that he'd seen that, they told me he was crazy. They absolutely said he was crazy. There is no such thing as snow on the equator. Beautiful trees, and one could have, you know, one could go into detail on any one of these slides. Flamboyant tree in Nigeria, beautiful trees and flowers in many parts of Africa. Rivers that are very important to life and commerce. The Benue in Nigeria, one of the major rivers of Africa, and you see many things happening there. You can see what people are doing. You can see for yourself. Perhaps you don't know what the man who was right closest to us with the white coat is doing with his shoes off, unless you have been in Africa. What do you think he's doing? Pardon?
Praying.
Right, he's a Muslim. So they're bathing, they're washing, they're taking water home, but he's praying. It's time to pray. There's still game in Africa, although, as you know, the number is dwindling. It's still a very important thing for Kenya, Tanzania, and other places. It's important for their own country and also for trade, to be very honest. As one travels around Africa, you see people of many, many different groups. As I mentioned there are 52 independent nations. And there are over 1,000 languages and thousands of dialects. So don't ever ask anyone to speak African. We used to ask our kids sometimes to speak African. We know what they meant. Maasai, a very proud and independent group of people in northern Tanzania who face their own problems now as things change there. Ethiopian boys proudly showing off their homemade soccer ball. It's a ball that they use for playing soccer. It's not very big, but when you have no access to anything else, it's the best thing you can do. And of course, that country, we could spend a couple of weeks just talking about the suffering of that country and the war that continues there, and also the famine, the drought. One thing you see in Africa is carrying little sister, little brother on the back, wherever you go. That's a very important part of their culture. Liberian boys since this picture was taken, some very sad and terrible things are happening in Liberia. And whether they're smiling now, I don't know. This is in a rural part of Liberia. But it's to show the warm and friendly welcome you get anywhere you go in Africa, especially in the rural areas, but also in many of the urban areas. People live in all kinds of settings. Many still live in grass huts or mud huts. After all, if that's what the material that's available, that's what you do. So in Cameroon and many parts of Africa, people still live in these kinds of houses because they use the material that's at hand. Other places you'll find huts or houses made of cement blocks with tin roofs. And find the cities, you find some shanties. We'll look at that. But for many areas in Africa, this is still the traditional way of building houses. Sometimes it's a combination, mud-walled hut and some tin roof. This is on a mountain near Arusha in Tanzania. See the banana plants and the coffee plants. Markets in Africa are a very, very important center for commerce, for socialization. It's a big event of the week. This is Liberia. Many African areas I know, they'll have one day a week designated as market day, and people bring in their produce, their livestock, whatever they made at home, and walk for many, many miles, and then they come in and they trade and they exchange. Some money, sometimes it's just barter. It's a very, very important event and the highlight of the week. That and for Christians who would be going to church on Sunday. Agriculture, most of the Africans still live in a very simple kind of agriculture. Work is done by hand, a lot of it, and most of the work is done by women. In some countries, men will do the plowing and women will do the rest of the work. But the basic planting, cultivating, harvesting, most of it is done by the women. Preparing the food. In Tanzania, pounding the corn. Many, many places in Africa, this is how food is prepared. Twice a day, three times a day, usually twice a day, in the morning and evening. Whether it's cassava, whether it's corn, this is cassava being prepared in Cameroon. It's a root crop, long tuber, and it's brought up and chopped and put out to, it's fermented, put out to dry, and then that too is pounded. So there are many, many, many millions of hours spent in preparing food like that and pounding out the cassava. And another arduous task for African women is gathering the firewood. They have the job of going out in the bush and getting the firewood. And it's getting harder and harder as the firewood, the bush and trees are farther and farther away from the cities and they have nothing else, so they go for miles. This lady didn't have to go so far, but traditionally she's also carrying her young child in the back and carrying something else in her hand, Central African Republic. And then water, tremendous problem for many people. Have to walk miles to wells, to springs, to rivers. This is Ethiopia, northern Ethiopia. Most of Africa carries things on their head. The Ethiopians, is more like the Middle East, they carry the jugs on their backs. And it's a tremendous job to get the water, and it's a tremendous job to, often it's not clean or proper, it's not clean or clear water, so there's another problem. Another thing that's changing rapidly in Africa, urbanization. There were three cities, over a million, three decades ago. Now there are 30 cities, over a million, and some of them are becoming large. Not as large as Asia or Latin America, but this is Dakar, Senegal, about 2.5 million people in the peninsula, Lagos, Johannesburg, Dar es Salaam. The cities are growing, people are leaving the land, coming into town. There's nothing there. There's no employment, but there's nothing on the land either. And so another challenge also in terms of food, because as long as Africans were in rural areas, they could feed themselves. And up to 1960, Africa basically fed itself. And now because of people, for many reasons, one of them being people moving to town and not producing food, more food has to be imported, adding to the economic woes. Soweto and Johannesburg, very famous, infamous area, urban area, where, and we'll be talking more about South Africa next week, where the Africans must live in this area, and the white people live over the hill. You can see the skyscrapers over the mines. This area has about 2 million people at least living in it, and becomes more crowded all the time, and the lack of housing grows. And we can talk more about that. For many people, moving into cities means shanties. This happens to be in Cape Town, in the Crossroads area. Move into town, and there aren't no houses, and so whatever you can make a house from Lowe's. And if you can crowd in the back of someone else's house and probably pay rent to them, you do that. In this particular area, there's another battle going on. The police would come in and clear it out because they said they were illegal. So that's another problem they faced, besides just the, all the problems of being squatters and not having jobs and all the other things. Churches have faced many political pressures in various places, and you'll be hearing more about Namibia next week from Sowe Chesset. But an example of this, in northern Namibia, the church's printing press was blown up twice by sabotage. Obviously, government had a hand in it, the South African government. Bishop Cleophas Dumeni, you'll hear more about him next week. With the ruined printing press, one of those two times up in northern Namibia. That church suffered a lot because it was willing, it spoke out very courageously and clearly on behalf of its people against the South African government. AIDS, a French poster in Cameroon at a hospital. AIDS is becoming a great problem in Africa, especially in Uganda, parts of Kenya, Tanzania. It's spreading over to West Africa. It's kind of like a time bomb. And so governments, churches, the Church of Tanzania has a big campaign going, are trying to do what they can to educate the people that we need to become aware of this to stop it. And we shouldn't be ignorant anymore of what causes it. And if you, it says, have only one partner, or in the case of polygamy, have the same partners, because obviously you're talking to people who also are in polygamy. You have to be honest, you can't. So that's what that says. The droughts I mentioned before. Ethiopia is going through another one. This was in the early 80s in northern Ethiopia, when the Ethiopian people were being literally kept alive by gifts from the United States and Europe. And it's of no thanks to us. I mean, it's not that we did any great thing, because we're sending surplus food, as it were, but still, it was gratefully received. And you see the oil there, soybean oil, says gift of the United States of America. You see the American, the emblem. And they would get wheat or corn, usually wheat, and they would get soybean oil, and they would get powdered milk. And the attempt there, with the tremendous help of the Ethiopian Church and Lutheran World Federation, was to keep people on the land in their own villages, not set up villages like we saw on the TV, where people left the land. They had no choice. They're supposed to come in, take the food back, hopefully get them through the dry season, and then they got seed and help to plant for the next season. And this helped for a couple of years, but now another drought has hit, and there's more problems again. And as I travel around the church, people always say, do you ever see any of the quilts that we make? Well, yes, there are some of the quilts you make. That's in northern Ethiopia. Obviously, there are parts of Africa where people don't need quilts. It's too hot. But there are places where they need quilts. Ethiopia, 9, 10, 11, 12,000 feet. There are some of the quilts up in Desi, Ethiopia. And they're very, very, it gets terribly cold. Islam, and I mentioned again the growth of Islam. The whole encounter with Islam is becoming increasingly a tremendous challenge for the church, and how to live. Now, in some places, Islam is very aggressive, very militant. Other places, and like in Tanzania, there's quite a live and let live up to this time. There are other places where you're in an Islamic government, and you cannot have a church. Other countries like Senegal, this is Senegal, the country is basically Islamic, but you are allowed to do Christian mission work. But that's a whole other issue, and we will devote one session next week I'm saying, what in the world is the church doing in a Muslim country? You know, what are we doing here anyway? We'll talk about it. The involvement of American Lutherans, and that's, as I said at the outset, is somewhat the bias of this presentation, because I prepared it to use in our churches, basically. Goes back into 18, when was it, Liberia? Was it 40, in the 40s? And then Madagascar, 1888. And then many other churches after that. This was the centennial of American Lutheran involvement in Madagascar. Of course, now there is a Malagasy church. It's not an American church, never was. But they invited the Americans to come down there. Bishop Chilston was there and other people to celebrate with them 100 years of Christian ministry in southern Madagascar. One of the exciting and important developments in Africa in the last 30 years has been the involvement of African leadership. 30, 40, 50 years ago, even 40 years ago, almost all African churches were headed by white missionaries, white personnel. Now it's all African bishops, all African leaders. Bishop David Windy Baziri and his wife Margaret, the bishop of the Lutheran Church of Christ in Nigeria, also a graduate of Lutheran Northwestern Seminary. Many, many of the bishops and other leaders have studied at seminaries, and I know some of you know them. Pastor Paul Denu and his wife Pauline, past president of the Church of the Evangel in the Central African Republic. He had an election, and I think he was a little too tough on them, and I heard he was not reelected. Not because he'd done anything wrong, but I think he was trying to straighten things out. But he will teach at the Bible school now and will be still an important person at church. In Namibia, Dr. Zephaniah Kamita, many of you know him on the left, the vice deputy, the deputy bishop, Bishop Hendrik Frederick, the shorter man with the dark suit coat, and two deans, Ngapura, and the other one is written here and I can't see it, two deans. So these are the four leaders of that church. Now, Dr. Kamita is in the House of Assembly, so I believe will no longer serve full-time in the church, but what a powerful force he'll be, and you'll be hearing more about that from Solveig. But those are leaders in Namibia, this church, the South. Where do people worship? People get called to worship in all kinds of settings. This is in northern Cameroon. He's pounding on an old plowshare or something there, and people are being called to church. This is in the Muslim area. And incidentally, not long after I took this picture, that chapel was burned, but now by a Muslim chief who didn't want them. But now they have a new one and even have some walls on it this time. Northern Ethiopia, where a small congregation is growing in an area, happens to be Lauren Bleasy, Dr. Lauren Bleasy, some of you know him. Worked for many years, 30 years in Ethiopia. They built that church. They got help with the roof. Northern Namibia, this was just taken recently, people gathering for church. You know that 95% of Namibians are Christian and 55% or more are Lutheran, and you'll hear about that. But tremendous force in that area, the Lutherans and the Christians in Namibia. It's hot and dry up there in the summertime in Ubangula. Then in Ethiopia, the mother church, Mekaniesis, in Addis Ababa. Right downtown in Addis Ababa. The Ethiopian church is one of the fastest growing churches in the world. And in Nigeria, a church built by the Nigerian people which can hold up to 2,000 people, and every Sunday morning they have 3,000 people, up to 3,000 people on the premises. They have Sunday school and they have two services in English and Hausa, and 3,000 people. Now that contrasted with that chapel. You have all of that in Africa. You have churches like this, and you have these tiny chapels, and you have also people worshiping under the trees in Maiganga. But one thing in Africa, the churches are, the buildings are usually full, and the worship is lively and exuberant, like some of the music we played. There's a lot of singing. They're getting more and more into using their own singing, their drums, their own rhythm, and getting away from what was brought by missionaries from Europe and America. And it's much more exciting and more interesting. In Cameroon, the church has struggled to build the walls of a chapel. And then they ask for help from their national church or their churchwide office to build a roof. And the churchwide office gets help from the ELCA. And when the help from the ELCA is kind of slow in coming, then these people sit like this. So. We're challenging people in our church, or people in our church in Minneapolis now that want to put air conditioning in. And my wife and I are against it, but we may lose. But we say if you do it, the least you can do is buy a roof for one of these churches. If we're going to have air conditioning, they should have a roof. Cost about $15,000 now. Used to be about $1,500. It's about 10 times as, in 20 years, putting a roof on that church has cost about 20 times as much as it did 20 years ago. And it's just a base, you know, straight tin roof. Churches grow in Africa through, of course, in many ways, but adult baptism. Pastor Lauta, you can't see him, I'm sorry there, but in Nigeria has a very aggressive program of evangelism and also came here to the States and helped churches here to do more evangelism. Lord's Supper is a high point. Many churches only have it once a quarter because the pastors have large parishes, but it's one of the high points of their
time. Churches there struggle to support their own local clergy. Often it's a local pastor, a local lay preacher, not a pastor, someone who's had a Bible school training, or maybe not even that. And literally, it's the widow's mite for a lot of these people. But they always bring an offering. They don't always bring enough to support them, their leader, and the leader will have to have fields or a cow or a goat or something, some goats as well. But the emphasis is to try and have local self-support. And as I mentioned before, the services are, in many places, are they're getting more and more exciting, and they're using more and more of their instruments, using in Nigeria, you know, these pots. I mean, they have pottery, their own pottery they made. They hit this at different places and hold a hand over it, and then sing. It's beautiful. In Central African Republic, in many churches now, after the service, they'll go outside and go around a circle and sing and dance. And in this particular case, these two boys were playing the drums in the middle, and everyone was singing and dancing for a while before they went home. So a lot of joy, a lot of celebration in the midst of all the difficulties that I told you about at the outset. In Zimbabwe, you have two things. You have the uniforms. You notice most of the women have a uniform. That's very typical in Southern Africa. The women's organizations wear distinctive uniforms, different colors for different denominations. And also the welcome again, singing and dancing and playing the drums, welcoming us visitors there with a hospitality and a joy that's just hard to describe unless you've experienced it. The women's groups in different places, Cameroon, CR, they have their own uniform. That's in Central Africa, it says Femme pour Christ, Women for Christ. He is the president of the women's group and also was a visitor here to the United States several years ago. Her name is Helen Yatia. And Pastor Emma Muyora, some of you that were Wartburg graduates, Peter Chessis is here, taught her. On the right is Pastor Emma Muyora, the teacher at the seminary in Paulinum Seminary in Namibia. And on the left, it's Filipina Stefanis, the director of the women's work of the church in Namibia, the church in the south. There are two churches, the north and the south. And services that can be held in many places, and our missionaries get involved in many settings. That's Dave Simonson, some of you may know him, a missionary in Tanzania. This particular small parish was going to build a church out of brass and poles, but they hadn't done it, so the service is held out under the trees. And our people get involved. Janine Eglund, an ELCA pastor, talking over the confirmation lesson with one of her confirmants in the parish in Tanzania. Just showing some of the things our people get involved in. Irv Toso in the middle, a pastor just retired from Madagascar, worked for many years with Malagasy evangelistic teams. They would go out and visit in the villages and have evangelistic campaigns, helping to set up congregations in remote areas of Madagascar. Again, we talked about the relationship with Muslims. Ron Nelson has spent many years in Cameroon. Here he's dialoguing with a friend of his. They have very friendly relationships in many places in Cameroon between the Muslims and Christians. And of course, the whole question is the dialogue and what happens when you dialogue. And that's a thing we talk a little more about when we talk about Senegal. Training of pastors, very important. Madagascar, the seminary in Madagascar has involved teachers from the States and Norway, as well as Malagasy teachers, preparing Malagasy to go out and be pastors in their own areas. Because that's really the key role of anyone coming from the United States or Europe to work in these churches, is to be enablers, to help in the building up of the church, and not to do things for them, but to help them in the building up of their church. A seminary in northern Nigeria called the Theological College of Northern Nigeria, an ecumenical seminary. And some of you know Jonathan and Mary Price. They're going to teach at that seminary. In fact, I think they left. Cameroon Seminary in Maiganga, another place where we've been involved together with the African, and some of their faculty has also studied in the States. Philemon Baria, if any of you remember him from Lutheran Northwestern, is teaching at that seminary. Tom Christensen from the States. Bible schools, there are many Bible schools in parts of Africa where they train people who have not had a lot of academic training, but who feel called to be preachers and pastors, but not, it's not an ordination course, it's a Bible school course, but they go out and they serve in ministry in the congregations, in the villages. This is up in Poli in northern Cameroon. Church is involved in all kinds of things. We talked about a little bit about the drought in Ethiopia. After, at the end of that drought, before it was over, the churches realized more and more that they had to prepare to help the people now, not just emergency relief, but how do you help the people to sustain their lives. One of the things was to improve water supply. There was a spring here, and a technique that was learned in India by Ethiopians, bringing it back from India to Ethiopia, to cap this spring and have this water, there were three spouts coming out of there, you can only see two. People could get water to take home for home use. Then it went underground, and there was another tank, and there was a long washing table, so people could wash their clothes there, rather than just doing it on the rocks and in the stream. And then there was another place where the water ran down into a long watering tank, where they could water their stock, so they were using that water in many different ways. That was help from the Lutheran World Federation, done by Ethiopian personnel up in northern Ethiopia. Gardening for pastors and Bible school students in Central African Republic. An American missionary who's an ordained agriculturalist, he has a degree in agriculture and he's an ordained pastor, works with them to help them to have their own gardens so they can feed their families better, they can sell a little bit to enhance their income, and when they go out in the villages, hopefully they can help their people. And his idea is to work with them. So when they go out, he's not only teaching them the Bible, but he's teaching them something about farming and gardening. That's so important. Jane Rossing, some of you know Barb here, and some of you might have met Jane. Jane Rossing was an ELCA person serving in Senegal for about 7 years, 5 years, I guess. And Jane worked in the north with women's groups, enabling them, not doing it for them, but being a catalyst, I would say, helping them to set up beautiful gardens. And we'll talk more about that. We have some slides showing that when we talk about Senegal. But again, the role of a person like that to be an enabler, to be the person doing things for them. And as a result of some of the projects there, water is provided, and you might say happiness is water for your home and for your garden. Even though you have to carry it, you don't have to carry it as far as you did before, and it's there. Heifer project in Arusha, Tanzania was a very, very important thing. LWF was involved, ALC and other LCA were involved in that, providing funds for the poorest of the poor to get a heifer calf to enable them to provide milk for the family, to sell milk, and then to grow other cattle. And that was a very interesting project carried on in the Arusha area. Now it's spun out into many parts of Tanzania. Medical work has always been an important part. Many of the first hospitals in Africa were established by churches and missions. They got there and there was no medical care. And they started maybe on the backyard and then in the back veranda, back porch, and ended up having hospitals. Doctors like Dr. John Tosso and others. There are also African and Malagasy doctors. But more and more the emphasis, because of limited resources and the growing problem, is shifting to community health, to preventive health, to primary health care, trying to help people prevent some of these things in the villages. Talking about what causes disease, talking about water, talking about sanitation, also talking about basic food. You see the food, they're the building blocks. Paula Leacock-Stecker is a registered nurse, and she and her husband have been working to get the local people to organize their own health committee, their own committees, to take some control of their local situation. And there are people there that said, we can do nothing, we can't do anything. They got so excited over some of this that they ended up building a school for themselves, something they thought they could never do. They said, we can't do anything, we're hopeless and helpless. And because of some of these programs trying to enable people, they can take a hold of something and also improve their health. Sushila Engelbrecht is working in, I think she was here too, speaking. She's from the state of Washington. Her dad is a pastor in Seattle area. Sushila grew up in India, now is working in Senegal, in primary health care, the same kind of thing, trying to enable local people to take some control. In Liberia, when women come into the hospital, they're given a course in preparing food, because maybe they have food in their home areas, but to prepare more nutritious food for the children. Translation of the Bible, Dr. Lee Bonhoff has worked for years with, that's Kadir Mathieu. He worked with the Cameroonians to translate the Bible into one language. There are several, there are a number of languages. So you can have the Bible in your own language. Literacy. It's hard for us to believe, but of course in our country too, there are people who can't read. But we don't, what would that be like not to be able to read? These are wives of students who come to study. Their husbands will be lay pastors and they don't know how to read. So one of the important parts of the work is to teach these people how to read. Betty Ziegler in northern Senegal, working with some young Senegalese. Radio work. Radio studios in Africa. There was the famous Lutheran World Federation studio in Addis Ababa, the transmitter, which was taken over by the Ethiopian government. There are still some other studios broadcasting in other ways, and it's a very important part of the ministry. This is Madagascar. Programs are prepared, and in this case, sent out of the Seychelles Islands back to Madagascar. Again, distributing literature, selling literature. Lauren Bleasy has worked in Bible translation for many years, and when he travels, he always has Bibles and Christian literature with him. Then, getting toward the end, the challenge of the cities, coming back to that again. Dan Hart on the left and John Berg on the right, two ELCA pastors working in Dakar in city ministry, and one thing that they have done is set up a center. This is in a Muslim community, 100% Muslim. And you try to establish relationships somewhere. You try to establish a presence, and one way has been to establish a club. And about 2,000 kids belong to this. They come in, they have different activities, not only sports, but they have reading, they have language study, they have sewing for the women, they have a library, they have a number of things for people. Another activity of the church has been to help African people express themselves in their own culture, in their own art forms, but maybe in a modified way. For instance, tapestry. Beautiful tapestries are produced by African women in South Africa at an arts and crafts center. Pottery and tapestry, they won world prizes. And some of these women have never been to school, but it's tremendous what they turn out. A daycare center, a creche, day nursery in South Africa. The church provides for many of the mothers who leave early in the morning and go to work, come back late at night. The fathers are probably gone to the mines or far, so these kids have nobody at home. The church provides something for them. Administrative assistance. I thought we should have something like Esther Oberg, who spent many years in Tanzania as an assistant to church bishops, an important thing, important part of ministry. Schools for children. Carol Swanson from California. School for missionary children, other children away from home. And so we end up this quick overview of Africa, very quick and very general, with a look at a chapel in Cameroon, the first chapel built in this whole area. You can hardly stand up in it, but we worship there with the people, and they had built this themselves. And the cross, again, is a symbol of the gospel that we seek to preach and to demonstrate by what we do, that Christ, that God loves us, and that God sent Christ to die for us. This is the gospel that we seek to preach and teach and demonstrate and work in as we work with our African sisters and brothers. So that's the end of our overview. Come back next week for more. Okay. Very good. If we have any time left, I don't know. I don't know.
There you can. We have 15 minutes.
We have. Good.
7 o'clock.
Okay, well, then let's have a chance. You can ask questions. I'm not sure I can answer them all, but yeah.
When we said the women do all the agricultural work and all
yeah,
that.
Well,
what are the men doing?
Largest proportion. Good question. It comes part out of tradition that I think one can only make sense of this if you go back. If you back to the division of labor. In the days, and again, there's some similarities, I think, with American Indian. Way back, the men, most places the men build the houses. You know, that they usually did. Also, the men governed. You know, they governed. And you didn't have governments, you didn't have presidents. And I was just rereading some stuff here again. It's interesting. It's saying, you know, what's happening in Africa today. You go back, each area had its chief.
and he governed. I mean, I'm simplifying it, but he governed. How did he govern? He called, in those cases, mostly the men. He called the men together. They sat down in a council, and they had some villages even had a place for the council to sit in the middle of the village. Some of you may have seen that. And they would talk, and they would talk, and they would talk, and they would talk, and they would talk things out. And that's how they would govern, until they got kind of a consensus. And most good African chiefs, they didn't just rule by dictate, but they worked out a consensus. So they spent a lot of time doing that. And if there was I can remember even when we came to Africa, you'd hear someone's cow had gotten in someone's cornfield, eaten up a bunch of corn. Okay, you had to settle that. You got to go before the chief or the sub-chief. Probably they discuss it, and then they say, okay, you got to give this person some money, or if you haven't got money, you got to give them a sack of corn. They spent a lot of time doing it. Hunting, obviously, providing food. A lot of African men spent a lot of time hunting, which could take days. Those kinds of things. Now, obviously, there were times when they sat around too, but one of the problems is there's what's left of what I've told you, see? There isn't much left. Whereas the food production, providing for the kids, getting the water, getting the wood, and that's still there. So the women have this tremendous burden. And in some places, the men help. In southern Africa, they did help with the plowing, but after that, they left pretty much it to women. So it's a problem, and the women's burden has increased, if anything. And of course, then as things developed, and as in South Africa, and that's a whole story in itself, but the government wanted that. They wanted the men not to be able to have enough to live on, so the men went away to the mines or to the factories and worked. Then that's what they would do, you know, and it happened. Is that somewhat helpful? It's there are lots of angles to it, but that's basically, I guess, what I would say.
I have a question.
Yeah.
You were talking about the incorporation of elements of the traditional African religions with Christianity. Could you just give some examples of some of the types of things that are happening?
Well, first of all, the basic one, which has been there all along, and I think that's one of the reasons that has made Africans so receptive to Christianity, is the belief in a supreme being, in a creator God, which was very strong. And all Africans that I've known, or the books I've read, every African group had a creator God. And they had a name for that creator God. The Zulus call it Unkulunkulu, the Great One. And there's always some name like that. So that name, then when they start preaching and they start translating the Bible, usually that was a name that was used for Yahweh, or that was the name that was used for Yahweh. That was one. Another thing is in a number of African societies, there are different concepts of sacrifice for reconciliation. And it varies with the cow, with the goat, with the chicken. There are different ways of so having a sacrifice to atone for sin is something you understand. Those are two that I can think of, and there are some other strong things that and we talk about that next week, because I want to talk about what we can learn from Africa. But there are some other things they brought into the church, some gifts. Emphasis on community, the emphasis on wholeness, some things that we're losing or have lost. Emphasis on relationships, emphasis on people. But those two first things I'd say are some examples. And it has made Africans much more receptive to Christianity than, say, you know, in Asia, where the church is a couple percent Christian. And of course, Islam is a whole other situation. Okay. I don't want to separate myself.